Hello, everyone. Welcome to Laser Focus. This is the deep dive pop culture podcast from Nerdist. My name is Kyle Anderson. Thank you for listening. This week, we have a lot of Superman stuff to actually talk about. James Gunn has been very upfront, as he often is, about, you know, what is and isn't canon in his new DCU and all this stuff. And he shared out a series of images from different Superman media that he's taking into, you know, using as inspiration for his version of Superman. It used to be called Superman Legacy. Now it's just called Superman, which I think is probably a good idea. And it got us thinking about why is it so hard to adapt Superman for a modern audience? Because, like, you see those images and you're like, yeah, that's, of course, that's what Superman is. But for the last decade or more, really since Richard Donner, the first one, like, it has been really tough. So here to talk to me about Superman who else? It's the person that always comes on to talk about comic book stuff. long time Nerdist writer, comic book aficionado, and friend of mine, Eric Diaz. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So yeah, like, I think, so for a long, long time, I was very pro Batman, very anti Superman when I was an iconoclastic youth.
And I think
that is not anti Superman because he did anything, but everyone, you know, there were people in my school who were like, Batman has no powers. Like, he's lame. I'm like, what are you talking about? Batman's the best and all this stuff. And so I was anti Superman because of that. And then once I got to, you know, become a learned adult, I was like, no, Superman's actually super awesome. But I actually think more people were in the camp and still are in the camp that I was when I was in high school. And that makes it much more, I think it's an easier lift to adapt Batman to whatever you want, because Batman is just inherently more versatile than Superman and other superheroes. So like, if you make a good Batman movie, great, good for you. Like, I think, you know, we've talked about Matt Reeves's Batman is great. A lot of the Nolan stuff works. I mean, but you can't apply the Nolan tropes or the Nolan kind of sensibilities to most other superheroes. I feel like only Batman's the one to do that with. And I think that's where a lot of the problems have lied. So first, before we get into what James Gunn was actually talking about, we'll go through each of his different share outs and kind of just talk about what we think he can pull from those. What is your history? Because you're a DC fan aficionado, like, long time. But, like, what is your Superman-specific history?
I mean, I didn't buy Superman comics probably until the mid-80s when the post-Crisis on Infinite Earths reboot happened. I mean, of course, I was super aware of Superman from the movies and Super Friends and toys and all that. And I liked Superman, but I didn't really read the comics.
Yeah.
John Byrne's reboot really was incredible for the time. Like, he really kind of stripped away a lot of the things that seemed cheesier about him in that era, and kind of, he made it more like the movie. Like, it felt Lois was much more like Margot Kidder's Lois. That Lex is the Lex that we all love now, when he decided that, like, you know, if you're a criminal genius, why are you living in the sewers? Like, why aren't you the richest man in the world? And he created this kind of Salieri Mozart Amadeus kind of rivalry between the two of them that I think is one of the best rivalries in comics. There really wasn't a reason for Luthor to hate Superman pre-Crisis that way. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he was just like, you know, you made my hair fall out. Like, well, you're a genius, make it grow back. Like, you know what I mean? It was stupid. Yeah. Whereas I love the concept of, you know, I'm the richest, most powerful man in the world. I have everything, but the only thing I don't, I can't be you. Like, I don't have this innate power and ability to make people love me for being a good person, you know? So this hatred that he has for him, it's a great dynamic. So that's when I really started to get into Superman comics. And then after Byrne left, the 90s was just a really good Superman era, like what they call the triangle era, because they had a little triangle on each Superman comic that would let you know throughout the year, like, where every issue fell between the different series. There was Adventures of Superman and Action Comics, and, like, it was one long continuous story told through different creative teams, and those were really, really great years for the character. And they really made him, you know, because at this era he told Lois that, you know, Clark and Super, they dropped that after almost 50 years, or you know, And it created this whole new dynamic for the character and having this, like, you know, partner in crime. And it was like, you know, I don't, I'm trying to think of like a modern equivalent of like husband wife team, you know what I mean? And it was just great. Those comics were really good. So that's when I became a fan of Superman comics. And there were a lot of good comics that came out of that, like, late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, you know, Superman era. So, but I mean, I've always liked the character. I have a little bit of side eye to people who tell me, like, they hate Superman. Like, yeah. I get if he's not your favorite, but sure. A lot of comic fans are like, I hate Superman. I'm like, why? He just does good things. Like, why do you hate that? Like, and it's because, yeah. And I think, I suspect it's because if they had that kind of power, they wouldn't. that's my judgment. Like,
yeah.
You just don't accept that someone who's that powerful would just do good things. And
I mean, ultimately that comes down to, like, you know, to get real philosophical, but it's like the Locke versus Hobbes, like, what is humanity? Like, if you inherently think humanity is unjust and corrupt, then you don't, like, there is nothing in Superman that you can relate to, because right. he is an outsider with powers he should, you know, a different version of him, which is why they've overdone that trope a million times.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, the conqueror Superman or Lord Superman, or, like, you know, the Injustice version, yeah. Who is like the evil conqueror. But he doesn't do that because he was raised. This is a very nature versus nurture debate as well. Because the Kents were such good people.
Yeah.
They instilled such goodness into young Clark. Because the people of Krypton kind of suck. Like, we've seen right. that over the years.
Except for Jor-El, yeah, pretty
Except
much.
Except for Jor-El, yeah. But so he basically had these – his only – and I guess, you know, Kara as well. But this kind of idealized versions of what a person ought to be, somebody with – I mean, it's essentially, with great powers comes great responsibility, but on a much kind of grander scale, because, you know, he could do all these things, but he doesn't. He's a generally good person. And so, like, who also happens to be a you know, faster than a speeding bullet and all that stuff. I find that nowadays it's like, that is what I want from a superhero comic. It's yeah. like, I'm kind of over this, like, gruff anti-hero stuff. Like, Batman gets a pass, but even Batman, if it's too grimdark, I don't care for it.
Yeah,
but Superman can't be that. Like, he has to be light
right.
and hopeful and awe-inspiring. That's why the first Richard Donner movie is so great. Mm-hmm. Thereafter, especially, like, the Richard Lester redo of Superman 2 and all that stuff, mm-hmm. they made it a joke. They made it silly.
Yeah,
but that first one is not silly. It is
no, like, there's silly aspects to it, but not
right.
Superman isn't silly.
No, right.
Lex, like, is, but
yeah. Right. Like, the movie can be silly, but, like,
yeah.
you got to take Superman, like, you know, there's a reason that tagline is, you'll believe a man can fly. Like, you have to be, mm-hmm. you have to kind of allow yourself to believe that aspect of it in order to, you know, for him to kind of stand out in the way that
yeah.
that he needs to. And I do feel like there's a lot of people who just say, oh, he's a Boy Scout. But, you know,
there are if real Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
There are if people who just read, too good.
That's why something like BVS, Batman v Superman, colon Dawn of Justice, I think is, and also Man of Steel for that matter. But, like, if the only thing you know about Superman is the way Superman is depicted in The Dark Knight Returns, and then you, well, what's the other thing about him? Oh, I think he died because of Doomsday.
No. Right.
If that's all you know, then that's the movie for you. But that's not what Superman is generally.
No, so, like Batman is a lot more malleable than Superman is. Like, Batman can be goofy. Batman can be super dark. For whatever reason, Superman is very set in stone. I think Spider-Man is a little bit too. Like, what sure. they are is very, like, no, it's this, you know. And when you stray from it, people tend to react. I mean, I feel Superman's the only character who's like, costume is almost untouchable. Like, people don't really like when you take away the red underwear. Like,
yeah,
they don't like even when that. Like, even that when they did the new 52 design and they gave him a collar, people like, Superman doesn't have a collar. I can't imagine any other superhero who's just mildly tweaked in that way where people have this kind of reaction. If there's something about him that's just, you know, they got it right almost from the get-go, although his costume did change, you know, but
yeah.
And but by the mid-40s, that's kind of what the costume was and stayed that way for 70 years, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what, like, he is an emblem, like, you know, yeah, more so than Batman is.
Yeah.
I find so much of Batman's, like, whole thing more interesting, and I think that, like, Gotham City and all the rogues are really interesting, and I think Batman himself is really interesting, but, like, and that's, I think, ultimately is why so many people have gotten Superman incorrect in films and just elsewhere, and why I'm hopeful that James Gunn will do it properly, is because you have to get the very specific, like, ethos of a Superman comic, which is that no matter what's going on in the world, he's essentially, you know, DC's Captain America. Like, yes. he is unwaveringly positive as a character. And that's why people lost their mind during Secret Empire a few years ago when, you know, it was an alternate version of, you're a clone or whatever, Cap, but like, Cap can't be pro Hydra. Cannot.
Right. That got overblown for me. I'm like, people, have you been reading comics?
I know. It's yesterday? Not like that's going to stay that way forever.
Like, but you realize it's a clone or some alt timeline thing, right?
No. Right. Yeah. Like, it's just there for the shock. But
yeah,
like, and for some reason, Superman has just become, oh, he's the bad guy in Injustice or whatever. Or,
well, no. I mean, and then the Superman archetype in, I mean, what is Homelander? What is Omni-Man? The idea that the evil Superman has become more popular than Superman irks me, even though those shows I really like and I understand what they're doing. I feel that's why James Gunn's Superman is super needed right now, because it's like, can we please have a positive depiction and not just a subversion? You know, I don't want any more subversions of Superman. For like, we need a moratorium. Like, as much as I adore The Boys and everything it's doing, sure, and what it's saying, like, we need just the idea that, like, yes, you can have all of this power, and just because you're a good person, you do the right thing with it. You know, there doesn't have to be some kind of twisted motivation. There doesn't have to be tragedy. You know, I think with Superman, it's like, whether Ma and Pa Kent are dead or not, because that comes and goes in the mythology, he's still Superman. He didn't need them to die to be, you know, a hero. Mm-hmm. You know, I really, and I think James Gunn kind of knows that. Like, I just get the sense that he knows that this is the time to do that version of Superman, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why, like, you know, it's just absolutely, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, now is the time for that version of Superman. And also, if you are going to set up a brand new cinematic version of the DC Comics universe, you simply must make Superman your priority. Batman will find his audience and find the voice and everything like that. I think it's interesting that they're going with the Grant Morrison, like, son of Batman route. I think that's smart, because that's something we haven't seen. We've seen young Batman a million times. We've seen older Batman with a son that he didn't know he had. I think that's way more interesting right now. But you put all of your efforts into making Superman work, because if Superman doesn't work, then it's just like, well, we saw that. I mean, the DCEU never had a strong central figure, because it killed him right away. And it also, like, in the entire Man of Steel, which is, I don't think a bad movie, but I do not like the third act, because, like, Superman doesn't save anybody. Like,
it doesn't save anybody. I do like the movie. I mean, I like it less and less over the years, more to do with the cult around the movie than the movie itself. The movie itself, I sort of feel, is in this weird camp that Batman Returns in, which is like, Batman Returns is not really a Batman movie. It's a Tim Burton movie where he uses Batman iconography to deal with Tim Burton things.
Yes.
Man of Steel is an alien invasion movie that uses Superman, you know, archetypes and, you know, character names. As an alien invasion movie, I think it kind of rocks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, it's a good alien invasion movie. It's not a great Superman movie.
Mm-mm.
You know, there just hasn't. And then, you know, this goes back to Superman Returns. They didn't nail that one either, even though Brandon Routh is a good Superman and would have been. But, like, both of those movies, like, did opposite mistakes. Like, Superman Returns, like, you want to see him fight somebody. You know, you do want to see that. because it's Superman, and it's the modern, it was the, you know, modern CGI era. We could see this now, and they didn't give us that. They did give us the really cool him saving a plane scene, which is what you needed in Man of Steel. Like, both of those movies didn't do, they needed to have both of those elements, and neither of them did. You know what I'm saying? Like, Man of Steel went all in on the fighting and none of the saving, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
It's like, you need to have both. Like, we want to see him beat up Brainiac, but we also want to see him save civilians. It's, you know, and be romantic, you know, and be charismatic and nice. And, you know, he's the guy you want to be or be friends with or date, or he, that's who Superman is. He's everybody's type. You know what I mean? Like, so that, yeah, I just hope James Gunn knows that, but he's, I trust, I really do trust him.
I like, do too. Yeah. I mean, to say nothing of the Guardians movies, which, like, he kind of had more runway with those because those were not, like, super well-known characters, but, like, that the Suicide Squad movie is so good.
Yep.
It's somehow, it's my favorite DCEU movie, which is a sequel to my least favorite DCEU movie.
Isn't that crazy?
Somehow, yeah.
Right. He just gets, and he knows, I mean, we'll get to it, but, like, when you see all of the images and comics he's referencing, it's like,
yeah,
that's right. I saw someone online complain. It's like, is anybody upset that he just didn't go out of the box? I'm like, no, I don't want him to go out of the box. Be inside the box right now. Like, I once you get, the box hasn't been done right in 45 years with Superman on screen, on the big screen. So yeah, no, I don't want him to, like, throw out some weird, you know, comic that isn't quintessential Superman. Like, I'm glad that he's doing ones that are like, yep, that's Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super, like, you wrote you've been writing a series of for us, which is like the X best runs of various characters and stuff like that. And I, you know, your X-Men stuff and your Batman stuff, I largely agreed with before even reading it. I was just like, yep, these are the ones that I know of. Superman, I don't know as well, just across the board. Like you, I didn't grow up reading Superman comics. I watched Super Friends and I watched the animated series and that kind of stuff, but I wasn't, like, steeped in the comics of it. And so I've been slowly picking up stuff, and, like, a lot of those ones that you wrote about months ago, like sometime last year, are the ones that that are referenced, or that Gunn said he's using as, and it's like, there's a reason that there's so much overlap. And it's not just that you and Gunn have the same tastes. It's that that is essentially what Superman needs to be, are these arcs.
Yes.
The death and return of Superman was a huge thing, but that, I mean, as great as those comics were that decade. And also, other than maybe the X stuff, which kind of goes off the rails at a certain point, Superman is one of the rare combo characters that has a good 90s.
He really does have a good 90s. Yeah. For the most part, till later on, like towards the end of the decade. But those 90s comics, when they're like what they call it, the triangle era. Yeah. Like, when you had so many really good creatives working on those books, and those were really good comics. And it was weekly. It was every week you'd have a new Superman comic. It was a one continuing story for the character in a way that Batman wasn't. Batman was very much like Detective was its own story, and Batman was its own story, and, like, they were all sort of separate, but, like, Superman was one, you know, continuing story about Lois and Clark, because she was a big, big character at that, because that by that point she was in on the secret. They were about to get married, you know, all of that. And it was just, it was some great comics. It was, I wish they would collect a lot more of those. I mean, they have the death and return of Superman, but there's a lot more to that era, you know?
Yeah. I would love to. I mean, because that is the stuff I really want to try to get into. You know, because that hasn't been collected, I haven't really
started. It's hard because it was like a weekly comic. Yeah. So imagine how many comics that is to collect into, you know. I was a little tickled because when I did that article, I think I put that the Triangle Era is the best Superman era.
Yeah.
And one of the Superman and Lois writers was like retweeted that and was so happy. He was like, I for sure thought it was gonna be something else, and the Triangle Era is the best. And I'm like, right, it is. It was like, it's so great, you know, and having someone from the Superman writers acknowledge that made me happy.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't realize that had happened. So yeah, let's go through the James Gunn stuff. First of all, we did know, and this wasn't part of it, but he mentioned it in the thread that Donner's Superman movie from 1978, like, that's the first modern superhero movie. Like, it is incredibly influential in a lot of ways. Oh, yeah. So I think using that as your jumping off point is like incredibly smart, because that's what you want to try to elicit with your version of the character.
Yeah. And it's also all the MCU movies use that. There's an anecdote from Kevin Feige, I think it's in one of the books about Marvel, that he says before the production of every Marvel movie, he makes cast, crew, director watch Superman the movie. And he's like, this is what we want to do. Like, this is always the template for a superhero movie. And I'm like, yeah, that's why so many of those are good, you know, like, because he understands that. And I'm sure that Gunn does too. Like, clearly, like, that's, there are things about it that don't work anymore. I don't think Gunn likes the Gene Hackman Luthor and has said so, that that's not a route he wants to go with Luthor. Sure. But the other stuff, I mean, the Krypton stuff, like the Smallville stuff, all the lead up to him going to the fortress is fantastic. You know, so yeah, smart of him to go there.
Yeah. Yeah, the Smallville stuff especially, like, it's still, it like looks great, and there's like a there's a gauziness to that movie that I think is is like inherent to the old Hollywood style that it's going for.
Yep.
It's like, because I mean, you can, for good or ill, like Superman is sort of like a, you know, he's a 30s 40s character, like it's harder to update that to the modern age sensibility wise but I think like that movie really does a good job of splitting the difference. Like there's clearly 70s stuff in it, but then there's also like just the traditional. So yeah, that's a great one to start with, and I'm glad for that. But obviously let's get into the more kind of esoteric stuff, or the more comics focused stuff. And by the way, every time James Gunn mentions specific comics, like the sales go like off the charts. The first image was, of course, just the image of Superman breaking chains around his chest from Superman number one from 1940. That is, seems like a no-brainer to me. That's like, let's go back to the origins of the character from Simon and Schuster.
Yep.
Next, we have All-Star Superman. Now, this was one that he called out in that first initial YouTube video, kind of like announcing the entire new DCU. I hadn't read it. And I have since, and it's so, so stinking good. Like, it's, I know it's kind of like Superman at the end of a version of his life, spoilers. But it's like, what if he were Hercules having to do various trials and stuff? And
yeah,
I think it's perfect. I think it's a perfect Superman story.
Yeah. All-Star Superman is fantastic. It is kind of the quintessential Superman story of the modern era, like, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And the art's great. Mm-hmm. The writing is great. It's got everything. It's very Silver Age, but with a modern sensibility to it. You know, it's And it has that one. He used the panel, I think, of him saving the girl from jumping off the building, right?
Yeah.
That's the one. That's everything Superman needs to be. Like a comforting presence to convince you that, like, it's the life is worth living. You know what I'm saying? Like, that panel, I hope if they recreate a panel from any comic, I hope it's that one, you know.
Honestly, yeah, because like for those who haven't seen it, it's you say saves a girl from jumping off a building.
Well yeah, he might, convinces her not to jump,
right? You might think that he swoops in and saves her, but literally she drops her phone off the thing, she's crying, she's gonna jump. Superman appears behind her and says, your doctor really did get held up, Reagan. It's never as bad as it seems. You're much stronger than you think you are. Trust me. And then he just gives her a hug, and that's the end. And that's Superman, man. Like,
right. That's Superman right there.
Like, he's just a good hero character. He's not, you know, he doesn't save people because I'm a god and I must, you know, all this stuff that drove me nuts about BVS and Man of Steel first to a certain degree, but like, he's just like, ugh, I gotta save all these people. Like, it's just, he's so put upon.
It's not a burden for him.
No, it is his reason for existing. Like,
yep.
He and he's not mad about it. This is my life, and that's what he does. So the other great thing about All-Star Superman is so the art is by Frank Quitely, who has worked many times with Grant Morrison, specifically on their Batman and Robin run for a while. But what I think is really great that Frank Quitely does is that when this Superman, who is huge, he's a giant, of a guy. When he is Clark Kent, he puts him in baggy, oversized suits, and he kind of like slouches over. He looks like a dork. It's not like as immediately clear. Oh, this is just, I mean, cause like Henry Cavill with glasses on is still just Superman. You know what I mean?
Like, that's the glasses Superman. That it's the hardest part of the mythology to make modern and believable. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I get that. That's part of it. John Byrne in the 80s had a really good explanation. He had a way to keep that while making it not as silly, which was, nobody really knows what Superman looks like because when he's Superman, he's always sort of vibrating at this frequency that no one can get a really good photo or video of him. So they know that he's a tall white guy with dark hair and the costume, but like there's never good photo evidence. So therefore people see Clark Kent on the street and nobody's like, wow, you look like Superman, because nobody really has a good idea. That doesn't work as much anymore because of digital. You know what I'm saying? Like, in the 80s, you could say that because there wasn't digital cameras. There wasn't all of this software to make, you know, that work. But there has to be a way to make that work. I think it's just always harder when you have characters like Lois and Jimmy who are friends with both characters.
Yeah.
Like, you could convince the world that, like, hey, I just look like that Superman guy. And people will be like, okay, whatever. You have them both show up at the same time and no one will think about it again. But, like, when it's his friends who are friends with both of those people, that's when it gets tough and more unbelievable, you know. As much as I love Superman and Lois, the show, the idea that his own kids didn't know, like, was, I'm like, come on, like, don't you watch TV? You know who Superman is.
Yeah,
it's not weird that he looks like your dad.
Yeah, it's like, hey, he looks exactly like my father, who I see daily. Yeah,
who I see daily.
I agree. That is a bit silly. And also, they've done the face vibration thing on the Flash TV show, so it's not like. On the one hand, it's you can get away with that. But on the other hand, it's like, well, they did just do that on the Flash TV show.
They did. I forgot that they did that. And I like that. I thought that made sense. And even then, he didn't even need it. He had a mask. So it was more like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. But I think there needs to be something like that. We don't know if in this version, Lois is going to figure out that it's Superman. Like, we don't know. It's early in his career, but I don't believe it's origin story.
No, it's not an origin.
It says specifically it's not. So it's possible she already knows, or it's possible she's going to find out in this movie, whatever.
Right.
It's okay. Great. If you haven't read All-Star Superman, it's 10 issues? I think it's completely.
It was 12. Yeah. It was supposed to be a year, but it took like three. It's all collected. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a particularly thick book. It'll take you, you know, a night or two if you're just kind of casually reading. There's an animated
adaptation that's not great.
I haven't watched that because I heard
they cut great. Out too much stuff. It's just, you can't do that story in 70 minutes.
No.
Yeah.
Next up is Max Fleischer Superman, which again makes perfect sense, like from a visual standpoint.
Yeah.
Is that a happy sigh or a sad sigh?
Oh no, that's a happy sigh. That's like, okay. Oh, those are great.
Yeah.
Those are, I mean, as you know, there's no Batman the Animated Series without those.
No,
Fleischer, Superman. Yeah. I mean, I think those are fantastic. Just visually, they're important to Superman lore overall because that's where he started flying.
Mm-hmm.
Before, you know, leaping tall buildings, that's as much as he could do. He could jump really high and punch something. Then the cartoons was like, let's just take that to the next visual level and have him fly. The comics quickly followed suit. And they're just, the action's fantastic. Lois is awesome in those.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she is just completely like, you know, Rosie the Riveter era. This is like that era when women were, you know, the boys were off at war and they had to take on men's jobs. And Lois is super go-get. I love that Lois. And it's not the Lois of 10 years later. I mean, if you look at Lois after that era, it's all about like, I need Superman to marry me. I need to, you know, all of this, not that Lois. And I hope that they draw inspiration from that. And especially the action stuff. The action in that is great. I mean, there's a lot of problematic stuff. It's World War II.
Yeah.
So,
like. Oh, yeah. Well, they recently remastered all of them and put them out on Blu-ray. And I had never watched all of them. I'd seen quite a few of them, but I never actually watched all of them until this release. And there's definitely some that are like, that are propaganda films.
They're propaganda World War II films. Yeah.
But yeah, the first one and the, Superman against the mechanical men are two of the best like Superman stories just ever. And I think visually, like, that is a great indicator of hopefully what Gunn and team are going for, where it's like, it's big Art Deco metropolis. It's yes. not the real worlds with different buildings. Like, it's, this is a different yeah. world. And you know, there's a version, and Batman the Animated Series did it as well, where like it's futuristic and throwback at the same time. Somehow it's like the yeah. 1940s version of the future, which I think is a really cool kind of aesthetic. And you know, we'll see what happens with that, but I as long as going in with that, I think that's a great way to.
Another thing that's really good about those cartoons, Superman's really powerful, but he struggles with stuff.
Yeah,
like, it's not like he's not a god. Like, mm-hmm. he has to fight those mechanical monsters, and it's a fight. Like, mm-hmm. he might lose, you know what I mean? And it's like, we need a Superman that's powerful, but that, like, things are an obstacle for him. Like, it's not a given that he'll survive, you know what I'm saying? That he'll beat these things easily. Mm-hmm. And those cartoons, Superman wasn't a god yet. He, you know what I mean? He was more like an amped up Hercules.
Yeah.
Like, he could do these amazing things, but he wasn't, you know, he didn't have all the powers quite yet. And I like that.
Yeah.
So I hope that he goes with that.
Yeah. He wasn't immobile, or, you know, when like stuff would punch him, like, or hit him or whatever, like, if it's big enough, it's gonna stagger him back. And like, yeah. you know, there's one of them where like somebody's shooting like a laser at him or something like that, or like a heat ray, and he has to like really fight against it. Like, he's yes. like, you know, and that's some of the best Superman stuff. And he like puts his hand over it so he can like walk. It's not gonna kill him, but it's also like, it's like being in front of like a, you know, a jet of water or something like that. Like, you would struggle to try to walk through that.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Superman is with that stuff. Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's, you know, I'm okay with him, you know, somebody shooting him and it just bouncing off. That's part of the
sure.
thing.
A but bullet, other stuff, yeah.
if it's big enough, then it, you know, or powerful enough or whatever, he has to fight it. And that's, yeah. you know, it can't just be kryptonite. Like, there has no. to be other bits to it. So yeah, I think that's a really cool one to pull from. Next up is the Alan Moore comic, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. I've not actually read this one.
Yeah, it's a really great story. It's the one that it kind of was the capper on the Silver Age era of Superman, right after Crisis, before John Byrne. It was like, we're gonna end this era. It's a great story. It's not my favorite Alan Moore Superman story. That's the one that I like the most of. I think he did two. Was the one they adapted for Justice League Unlimited, which is I forget the name of it, but where he gets the gift and
so the Superman for the man who has everything.
For the man who has everything, yeah. I love that story more.
Alan Moore,
now probably would never acknowledge that as a great story, but it is. Yeah, I don't know what they're gonna pull from that one, because it's such a definitive end of Superman story. And this is the beginning of Superman. I do think that story really is, the Fortress of Solitude plays a big part of it. You know, he spends a lot of time there. I think we're definitely going to have a lot of Fortress stuff in James Gunn's Superman.
Yeah, I do too.
And it really deals with how his presence affects those around him. There's a lot of Lois and Jimmy. It's really about his whole family.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's where the inspiration will come from, because I don't see them adapting that particular story. Like, that's just... That's an end story. So is All-Star yeah. Superman, but there are a lot of elements of All-Star Superman that have nothing to do with, you know, his final days or whatever.
Right.
Not so with this one. This was very much about, like, you know, it's saying goodbye to Superman.
Yeah. And I think, you know, based on what you're saying, like, you can adapt the kind of pathos and the kind of, you know, he can be lonely without being the lonely god. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, yes.
Which I think is an important distinction. Like, he is friends with these people, but they don't know the real him, or, you know, like, all that stuff you can go for. And it also, like, tonally, like, just the image you chose, other than the, you know, him crying, which was what Gunn showed, but like the cover of it, mm-hmm. You know, there's the new Brainiac Luthor team and like all this stuff. Yeah. Like, it is very Silver Age-y. So yeah. like, I think, you know, Silver Age with the Bronze Age mentality, I think is hopefully tonally and like aesthetically what he's going for more so than the end, but we shall see about that. But I'll have to pick that one up. It's short, right? It's only like an issue.
It's like two issues. Yeah.
Yeah. Also George Perez.
Yes. Kurt Swan and George Perez, two Titans together.
Cannot be mad about that. Anytime I see a compendium coming out with George Perez art, I'm like, well, this one's got to go on the list at some point. Like, I've never read Avengers Kurt Busiek, but I was like, well, I'm getting that book because George Perez art.
Great. Yep.
Really stoked to read that one.
Yeah.
Superman Annual number 6 from 1962 was another one. When that one is like, the image is just it's Superman. Yeah. Superman, Supergirl, Bizarro, a ton of these like kind of external super characters. I think, what is that? Professor What's-His-Face from Star Labs is there.
That's pre-Star Labs. It's, oh gosh, who is it? I have to, I know Jor-El and Lara are in the original pick. The Legion is there.
Yeah, the
Legion. The Legion is like also, and I'm wondering if, I am a big Legion fan, and I hope that we see them in whatever Gunn is going to do in his DCU. I think they're in a crucial part of Superman's lore because they're, you know, it's sort of not a paradox, but it's sort of a time loop. Like the Legion of Superheroes are this group of teenage superheroes in the future who are inspired by Superman's adventures 1,000 years earlier, but they literally recruit him as Superboy to join their future club. And he learns how to be a hero in large part from them who were inspired by his actions as an adult. I mean? And they're very much his childhood best friends. And I kind of love, I hope that they're at least there's a nod to them. Like, I hope when we go to the Fortress of Solitude, you know, he has in the comics, he has the statues of his friends like there. Just throw that in there so that like at some point someone else in the DCU can pick up, like, let's do the Legion of Superheroes is like, and you know, you recast Superman because he's Superboy at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a young kid who's like, hey, kid in Smallville, one day you're going to be this great person and, you know, we want to know you. And I think that would be great. So I hope that that's a nod to like the Legion being there. But I think overall, that's just more like James Gunn saying, like, there's a Superman family. Like, there's him hand in hand with his cousin Supergirl, front and center. She's going to be a part of this. This is, we're really going to do the large cast of characters, you know.
And in that same token, so like the image that he shared from Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, as well as this image, and knowing that Millie Alcock has been cast as Supergirl and that there is going to be a Supergirl movie that is directly based on whatever the heck that movie is called.
Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow.
Woman of Tomorrow, yeah. Which is great. A really, really good Supergirl book. But both of all of the have Crypto, the Superdog. And
Crypto, I think Crypto's going to be in it.
I think he is, and I think he must be because Crypto is such an integral part to that Supergirl story.
Yes.
Because she takes Crypto to this other planet so that she can get drunk. It's a really funny beginning.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, because they haven't officially announced her as being in this movie, but they cast her already for a movie that doesn't go into production for quite some time.
Yeah, she's in it.
She's in it. Yeah. And I wonder if we're going to get a scene with the two of them where he's like, hey, can you watch after Crypto for me or something? Like something that like where he kind of is like, you know, the three of them are together. I mean, the fact that we're going to get a Crypto at all, like Crypto for a long time was the symbol for comic book fans of like what you don't do in Superman because it made him too silly. And now people love Crypto. You know, I think that like you can totally do that now. I mean, because, you know, it's a dog with a cape. It's the silliest thing ever. But James Gunn made us love a talking raccoon and a tree. He can make us totally buy into the inner turmoil and thoughts of a super dog. I believe it. You know what I mean?
And also like what's a quicker way to get somebody to like your character is make them have a dog that is also cute and smart. Like,
yes.
And, you know, can jump and like help out and stuff like that. And that's really exciting. I don't think they're going to do whatever the super horse's name is, but
Comet. No, I don't.
Horse, they're probably or not Beppo.
I don't think we're doing Beppo the super monkey. I don't think we're doing Streaky the super cat, but Crypto, I think is going to be there for sure. And I really think that image was James Gunn telling us that.
I think so too. Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed. All of that stuff. And just like the fact that like, you know, it's going to have Lois, it's going to have Jimmy, going to have Perry White. You have to have all these characters.
Yes.
And I think, you know, all good choices, like he's really good at casting. There's not been one casting announcement where I'm like, because even like something as silly as Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner, it's like, actually he's going to be a really good Guy Gardner. I think like that is exactly the kind of brashness. Like, cause for a long time they had like fandom wanted him for Hal Jordan, and he would have been good. I guess young Nathan Fillion would have been good. But I think he is a better choice for Guy Gardner, I think, across
the board. Yeah, for sure.
If you don't know Guy Gardner, the Green Lantern, read Justice League International. Please. Please and thank you. Okay, so after that, we jump to New 52 Action Comics. Yeah, so this was obviously in 2011 by Michael Choi. And I don't know, like... I think, you know, New 52 is kind of a rough sell for a lot of people. I think a lot of comic fans are especially kind of jaded by that whole thing, especially where like a lot of the characters got rebooted, but not Batman or Green Lantern.
Yeah, it was a really mishandled reboot because they didn't really start everything over from scratch.
Yeah,
they didn't want to disrupt sales on Batman and Green Lantern. But like, the Superman stuff was a mixed bag because Grant Morrison stuff was really great, but there's only 18 issues of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was go back to the beginning. He wanted to make Superman like 1938 Superman. He wanted him to be a, you know, crusader for social justice warrior, literally.
Yeah.
You know, he was like going to politicians' houses, corrupt politicians and wife beaters and all of these, you know, social ills of the time, depression era, you know, America. And his Superman was that, like, we see him start out with this, like, a t-shirt and jeans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a little cape attached to the t-shirt, you know, and it was and he couldn't fly yet. Like he kind of made it so it's like, yeah, this is Superman learning his powers. There's a lot of that stuff that's really good. It's a good Elseworlds run to me. Mm-hmm. I think there's too many like vital Superman things that came later that are missing, but like as an Elseworlds story, it's pretty good. You know, like I like his Brainiac in it. So I think there's definitely like going to be a lot of elements they're going to borrow from that. I need to reread it too. Like I haven't read it since it came out.
Mm.
And whatever, if I had mixed feelings about it at the time, it probably had to do much more with like just the New 52 in general.
Like I think we've talked about in some of our previous episodes that like, I could not have been more in on DC at the time. Like I got back into comics hardcore with Green Lantern. I was all in on Blackest Night and all that stuff. I was reading all the ancillary books. Brightest Day was kind of like bumming me out because there were so many books and all this stuff. It was just, and then you get Flashpoint, which is a great story, but it's like, now we're going to do a full, like an entire reboot of the entire universe. And I was just kind of like, I don't have the energy for this. I don't have the energy for this.
So I stopped
reading everything.
It was a weird kind of jumping off point for me because I started really collecting almost the entire DC line when DC had done that before during Crisis on Infinite Earths when I was like 11 years old. So that was my jumping on point. And I'm like, and then New 52 happens, you know, 25 years later, whatever it was. And I was like, is this my jumping off point? Is this where I don't have to continue to buy all of these? Because like, you know, my Wally is gone now. And I really disliked New 52 Wonder Woman. It has a lot of critical acclaim, but there's elements of it that I, as a Wonder Woman fan rubs me the wrong way in a big way. So it was just sort of a jumping off point. So I didn't pay as much attention to the Superman stuff as I probably should have. But I do remember the Grant Morrison stuff at least being well-written and interesting.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, you know? Yeah. Grant Morrison is nothing if not talented and always has a point of view or something like that. You may not like the general vibe of some of their stuff, but like you have to acknowledge that like if you read a Morrison book, like you're going to get point of view, you're going to get like characterization, you're going to get all this stuff.
Yeah.
And somebody who's not afraid to like shake up stuff just because like, that X-Men run is so good, but it's like, that was after 40 years of doing the same continuity forever, and it's like, well, let's change some stuff. I mean, it's the same continuity, but you know what I mean, like,
yeah
let's change stuff up, let's not have Jean on the team, let's have only some X-Men, like, and they do some wild stuff in New X-Men. Same with Batman as well, like let's kill off Bruce for like a whole 2 years or however long that run was, like
it was about a year. I mean,
yeah,
he's Grant Morrison has the best runs of so many iconic superheroes concepts. I mean, X-Men, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, even like he did the 3-part Earth One, you know, like he really kind of gets what is at the core of almost all of these concepts, you know, like I've always seen him as sort of like the anti-Alan Moore, not like because
at least because they hate each other, but
they hate each other. But like, they're both equally talented, but Alan Moore sort of hates superheroes deep down. He really does believe that if you have this kind of power, you must be a fascist. Like, he doesn't. Grant Morrison really sees them as, like, they're not real. They're beacons of positivity. Like, they're meant to engage our imagination. It's not about subjugating people. You know, even Batman, like, doesn't have to be that. And I vibe with that more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know? There's, you know, Grant Morrison also created Professor Pig, which is one of the darkest Batman villains
totally,
ever.
And yet
that overall run is, like, really, like, if you read that, like, the first issue with Professor Pig, you might go, oh my God, this is so gruesome. And it is, but it's also like a weird, like, these brothers who didn't know each other existed, like, coming together and having to, like, work together. Cause the entire, like, pre, like, Batman RIP era and Batman and Son era, which, you know, is the run right before Bruce dies, but Damian has respect for Dick Grayson, but, like, that's it. It's like, really hates Tim Drake, like, and Tim Drake obviously goes off and has kind of, like, his weakest era with when he's Red Robin. But that whole run where it, you know, Dick has to assume the mantle of Batman because Gotham can't be without Batman, like, it just wouldn't work without Batman.
Yeah. And my boyfriend was just telling me this weekend that the Batman comics he got into was the Grant Morrison era when it's Dick Grayson and Damian. And he's like, that dynamic is so great. And
yeah,
it is. It's such a great,
it's really,
like,
good.
He could make someone else be Batman and have me believe that it's Batman and care, you know, cause I'm very much usually like, no, Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Yep.
Like, he's not a legacy character, but oh my God, that Dick Grayson Batman is great.
Yeah. And then, of course, there was that wild, like, Bruce Wayne kind of jumping through time to get back to the present. Crazy. Like, it's so weird. It's so weird.
It's so weird.
Like, he's a pirate at one point. Yeah. He's like some kind of, like, Puritan or pilgrim, like, warrior or something like that. It's a very strange book. But anyway, all of that is to say, like, I trust and appreciate the fact that Gunn is, like, so such an acolyte of Grant Morrison, because I feel like nothing, not much anyway, of Grant Morrison's ethos of comic books have been adapted as of yet. Like, we have the name Negasonic Teenage Warhead, but it's very much a different character.
It's a different character.
Whereas nowadays it's like, oh God, Cassandra Nova is going to be in Deadpool.
Right.
And, like, you know, like, Gunn is adapting at least using as inspiration at least three different Grant Morrison books. So it's like, it's pretty cool. I think it's very exciting.
Well, I mean, I think of them because I'm old, but I think of them as, like, modern comics, but a lot of those are, like, now 20 plus years old.
Yeah, for sure.
They've been around long enough to become iconic themselves.
Yeah. And reappraised, because, like, so much of Morrison stuff is shaking stuff up. So if you're just if you're in the thick of it, you might go, oh, it's just too different. I get really mad about this. But, like, now it's 20 years later, and, like, you can look back at New X-Men and go, there was so much great about New X-Men. You know, and the fact that, like, raising Emma Frost to the character she is, and not just a bad guy, you know, like, really, really good stuff. Anyway, we always seem to go back to X-Men. Get through the rest of these. Okay, so this one is interesting. So it's an image of Batman, or no, again, I keep saying Batman, of Superman, like, on trial with the JSA from JSA 2010, which is a kind of continuation of the Kingdom Come version. What do you think, like, because Kingdom Come to me feels very much against the ethos of what
the rest here's of what is. I think of mm-hmm. this, him using the Kingdom Come stuff as a reference. I think it's going to be an opposite of Kingdom Come, like, in reverse, because Kingdom Come was a story about Superman arriving after being away for many years. You have all these violent anti-hero type superheroes who are fighting amongst themselves, and he comes in as this kind of, like, returning beacon of light. I think you're going to get a Superman in James Gunn's world. I think there's already a superhero community. Clearly, Green Lantern's in this. Mr. Terrific is in this. Like, there's either a Justice League or at least a superhero community. And I think a lot of them are going to be jerks. And I think Superman is going to come in as this new hero who's like, there's another way. You don't have to be jerks. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be kind of a meta commentary on, you know, we live in the world of The Boys and all of these, you know, jerk type superheroes, you know, even the ones we like, or, you know, Iron Man, whatever. They're all kind of assholes to a certain extent. And Superman's going to come into this world that already exists. There's going to be superheroes already and be like, you don't have to be like this. Like, we have a responsibility to people. Like, why are you fighting each other? You know, that's what I think. That's my theory on the Kingdom Come and why he wears the Kingdom Come, a version of the Kingdom Come S shield.
Yeah, like a more like a happier version, like a more, like, because I think there's yellow instead of black.
Or yeah, which, you know, I have a little bit, I like it, but I chafe a little bit against it because I do think that the classic Superman shield is one of the most marketable, like, iconic symbols ever. So there's a little bit of me that's like, why would you use anything else? That goes for Batman too. I feel like the yellow oval with Batman, like, those are just two of the most recognizable brands ever. Like, you still see them everywhere. Like, and for them not to use that, I don't really know why, but I think that there's a I think that Kingdom Come, you know, in reverse is why they're doing it, why he's doing it.
That makes a lot of sense. And also, like, remembering that there's going to be an Authority movie, and there was a, you know, another Grant Morrison, Superman and the Authority was like a whole thing for a while. So, okay. And the Authority is basically like a version of the Boys. They're like a violent kind of superhero team. Okay. I'm with you on that. I think that makes a lot of sense. After that, we have Superman, the animated series, like perfect. Like,
it's perfect.
I've been waiting for somebody to come out and say, I'm using the Paul Dini, Bruce Timm animated, whatever, as my, jumping off point. And I think, like,
it's the best version of Luthor.
Easily the best version of Luthor. A great version of Brainiac. A lot of, like, the Superman's rogues get revamped in a really interesting way. Like, Toy Man becomes like a really creepy character instead of
creepy, instead of just let's go back to Brainiac. That I remember when they premiered Superman the animated series, and of course I loved Batman, and I was like a little bit weird just as a longtime comic book fan when they did Brainiac, because I'm like, you know, just my immediate, like, gut reaction was like, Brainiac's not from Krypton. You know, like, Brainiac's, but it's so much better this way. Like, to make him, like, the AI that knew that Krypton was going to fail and let it happen, you know? And they're both sort of the child of Jor-El. Jor-El creates Brainiac. That's a great way to go.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to create, you know, they're almost brothers, but not. You know, I really hope they use the Superman the animated series Brainiac, and I hope that that's just what that image means. I hope that they use the Luthor and Brainiac specifically, and the Lois. Lois was great.
Lois is so good. Dana Delaney's Lois.
I mean, it really, what Tim and Dini did with Superman the animated series is really the same as what they did with Batman. They, like, looked at 50 plus years of comics and, like, this works. Let's take the best pieces of everything. There's a lot of the modern, you know, John Byrne Superman there too, because that's where that Lex comes from.
Yeah.
The idea of, like, LexCorp, you know, and all of that comes straight from the Byrne run, and they used that. But they also brought in Silver Age things that the comics had discarded. Like, okay, there are other Kryptonians in the Phantoms. Superman's not the only one anymore. You know, I really hope that they use as much from the cartoon as humanly possible, because it's so good.
And also, like, just the general tone and vibe of that, like, as, you know, much has been talked about with the Batman show of, like, you know, they started with black paper and then drew on top of that so that it was always dark. Superman is blue, like, is light sky blue, and Metropolis is beautiful gold.
Yeah.
That is my in my head, that is the version of Metropolis. Like, that is, it's bright, it's happy, it is about hope, and it's just like Superman is there to sustain that level of kind of like a nigh utopian version of what a city ought to be. It is the city of the future kind of thing. And that's why it's like, it made no sense to me in the DCEU where, like, Metropolis and Gotham are across the bay from each other.
They could have done something cool with that, because they could have made it them polar opposites that happened to be across, but they didn't. They didn't do anything with it. They're just both New York. They're just both like a version of New York. And I'm like, no. Like, you could do something cool with that idea of, like, the twin cities, and, like, one's the evil twin and one's the good twin. They didn't, but, like, I want them to do something cool with, like, Metropolis like that. It is that kind of, you know, American exceptionalism version of what we think America is versus what it really is. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hope they do that, and give me, like, all the Art Deco stuff that you can.
Oh, please. Oh my gosh. That is, it's like that. And that, it's incredibly impractical, but that version, the cartoons version of the Daily Planet building with the giant globe on top.
You need the globe.
You need it. You must have it. Like, it was one, it was like, okay, it's kind of fun in to make it the Flatiron building or whatever, but it's like, no. It needs to be this huge giant, like, and also it's a world where newspapers are still like trusted.
right.
And just generally people like think reporting is important and all this stuff. So can't say enough good things about Superman the Animated Series. I think, did you write a like best Superman episodes? I forget if you, I'm sure you
no,
did.
No, you did.
I did. Hey, you did. Kyle did. I'm the one who did it.
Yeah.
Okay. I knew I remembered it.
We write a lot of stuff, listeners, we sure so do. We forget.
All right. Home stretch. So penultimate one shared was a 1995, a panel from the 1995 Tim Sale, Jeff Loeb comic, Superman for All Seasons. If you've read Batman, The Long Halloween et al., those books, it's the same writer and artist pair. Again, like it's you would look at, it's essential. And you would look at The Long Halloween and go, how would this pair make a Superman book? And they do. And it's incredibly hopeful. And I love the Clark in that book. Like he's just so like, oh no, like, am I going to have to leave? You know, like all that stuff.
And the art is incredible. It's
The
whole premise of that, it's like a 4-issue series and it's Superman from the perspective of those closest to him.
Yep.
And you get all the different versions. I think Pa Kent is one of them. And that's the Smallville section.
Issue one. Yeah. Is Pa Kent.
Yeah. And you just like, I hope visually, like that's the Smallville that we get, you know, it's the Norman Rockwell, you know, America that probably never really existed, but like exists in our imagination, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, I hope that that's what we get. And it's just, that's a great comic. And it's short. There's 4 issues. You know, but it is quintessential Superman.
Mm-hmm. And I think they must have known that was going to be a thing because like they either are going to, or just put out like a big, like absolute version of it.
Yeah.
So which is like double the pages and it's all this like commentary and stuff like they often
do. Yeah.
Totally worth reading. I'm a big, Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale fan from their other books. And this was the one that I hadn't read. So I was like, time to read it. It's great. It's really, really good. And the image that Gunn shared is it's Clark in pajamas looking at the sunset off the farm. And it's the cornfield and the sky is like watercolor, kind of purple and yellow and orange. And he just says, you just see the back of him. And it just says, do you ever get tired of looking at that? It's like, that is, again, that's Clark Kent. Like, and the cover of it is really cool. It's like, you know, Superman kind of godly looking above the clouds. And then
Sale draws a thick Superman too.
Like, oh, it's kind of like he's thick.
Huge. Yeah.
He is a farm boy through and through.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. It's very funny. Like, cause he looks like, he's just stocky. He's just like, it looks like he's corn fed. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then the final one is Action Comics 2021, which is the newest one from from existence. But Action Comics is a very Lois and Clark focused book currently.
Yeah. So. And I think, it's an image of them, you know, him kissing Lois floating in the sky. It's very romantic. It's very, you know, telling me that like we're going to get a lot of Lois and Clark romance in this, which is great. They're like the best couple in comics ever.
Yeah.
Like some people try to give me like Mary Jane and Peter Parker and I'm like, they're in there somewhere, but like Lois is cooler. I'm sorry. Like she's like gets to do stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's Lois focused stories. Like
Lois had her own comic for decades.
Mm-hmm. I really liked, and that was another thing that I was kind of like bummed about when they did DC Rebirth, which I was like all into, and then they kind of messed it up and rechanged it. But that early Superwoman book where like Lana and Lois are like teaming up to be a superhero together, I thought was cool.
Yeah. I've often debated internally, should they make Lois Superwoman once she married Superman? Like I've always, I think I've come across, landed on no, they shouldn't, but I kind of like the idea of like, she's so prominent and in comics as, you know, it's kind of like Wonder Woman, then Lois Lane in terms of fame, you know, in comics, female characters, like, do you just want to give her powers? But I kind of like the idea that like, she doesn't, she's just this awesome, reporter who is, you know, the heart of Superman. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a great character and has been played great by a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of live action versions and animated versions of Lois that are really fantastic. I mean,
yeah, I'm really stoked because I don't know David Corn Sweat. I don't know, like, he looks like Superman, yes, to me, so I'm like, I'm happy about that. But yeah, like, Rachel Brosnahan is gonna be so good as Lois Lane. Like,
perfect. I wanted from before they even like rumored her for the role, like, that, because I'm a big fan of Mrs. Maisel, so I was like,
sure,
I want her. That's Lois. Yeah. That like plucky retro kind of attitude, you know, like, I just saw her as Lois a long time ago, so I'm thrilled that she got the part.
Yeah.
Like, I can see her being sarcastic without being annoying, like calling him Smallville,
mm-hmm,
in a way that's endearing. Like, hey, Smallville, let's, you know, like, that it's she's perfect. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the casting that I was just like, oh, hell yeah. Because really, you could argue if you get Lois right, Superman is easier to felt like, because he just has to be,
yes,
good, you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, yeah,
Lois has to be great.
Lois needs to believe him and believe in him. And that's the harder bit,
yeah,
I think. And like, Margot Kidder was good. Like, I definitely like
in Margot that first Kidder, movie. She's really
in that
good
first movie, yeah, but she was definitely, she was coming at it a little more like jaded, which I think like, yeah, Lois can, it's possible for Lois to be jaded, but I think she just needs to be forthright. I think that's kind of more,
yeah,
like, the world does get to her, but like, she knows that she can try to make a difference. And that is what she sees in Superman and Clark. Like,
yeah, you
know, ultimately
we've been blessed with a lot of really good Loises. Like, say whatever, yeah, you want. Terry Hatcher was a good Lois on Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
She was really good in that. Dana Delaney in Superman, yep, the animated series. And whatever I want to say about Man of Steel, I am one of the people who liked, Amy Adams. Like,
yeah,
I liked that she was very much a reporter. There was never any question that she didn't know who this guy was. Like, she figured it out right away.
Yeah.
She was good. I didn't like that she was a redhead, but like, other than that, like, I was like, yeah, you're being paid a lot of money. Like, be brunette. Like, like, that always kind of gets my, like, I'm like, it is one of the most famous brunette characters ever. Like, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Whatever. But like, you know, but I think we've been very lucky. But I kind of have a feeling Rachel Brosnahan is going to be maybe the best one we've ever had.
Oh gosh, I'm so stoked. I think, and just knowing like how much care they're actually putting into it, and like, you know, Gunn has said multiple times, like, people have asked about the Waller series that was announced and Peacemaker season 2 and all this stuff, and he even said that, like, you know, stuff had to be switched around because of the strikes, which we know, but he's like, I'm not going to direct every episode of Peacemaker season 2 because I need to make sure that Superman,
yeah,
is, my priority is making sure Superman is good and proper first.
Yeah.
And I completely agree. I think that is the absolute tack to take. And I think that is going to set up obviously he's announced a lot of other characters that we either are going to be in the, or we assume like Supergirl are going to be in it. You have to be able to make it a Superman story that just happens to have all these, you need to, like, if he's going to, yes, come into an existing DC world, you can't have it be, This is the DC movie. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be a Superman movie first and foremost. And then the fact that the Justice League,
yeah,
whatever exists as well is just kind of there for flourish, kind of proving how Superman is different from them in some fashion,
yeah,
that they, like, he makes them better. I think that's a cool thing. Like, it's the fact that like Guy Gardner is the kind of cocky a-hole version of Green Lantern, because,
yeah,
you need to be able to make, there needs to be some growth on the side of the Green, or of the Justice League, you know,
like, yeah,
because even they maybe have gotten kind of cynical with, you know, people like the Authority around and stuff like that. I that's my biggest, and I think to kind of sum up, like, what is Superman, the James Gunn version, need to be in order to be a success? And I think it's just lack of cynicism on the part of,
yes,
the movie,
on the part of Superman,
on the part of Superman. Yeah,
yeah.
Characters, you can have cynicism, can be cynical, certainly, but the movie, right, can't
be. Yeah, the movie can't be cynical. You can have a bunch of cynical characters in the movie,
right?
But Superman has to be the opposite of that, and I think that's what, yeah, we're getting. Just like, based on these characters, they're all, well, not Metamorpho. I mean, but like Guy Gardner and all these people, the Authority characters, they're cynical characters. So, mm-hmm, to kind of have him show up and kind of be like, it doesn't have to be this way. Like, we serve a purpose in society that's not just our self-aggrandizement, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if the whole thing is like kind of a commentary on like the boys, and not just the boys, but like all of that. Yeah. Just this idea that like, if you have powers, you're going to just be all about yourself. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, why? You know, I mean, the MCU did a really good job with Captain America proving that, no, you don't have to be that way. And people will like you, because mm-hmm. that's always been the argument. Superman's too perfect. People can't relate to that. I'm like, people love Chris Evans, Captain America. So I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you absolutely can do that. You know?
Yeah. Well, and that was like, again, I don't want to just keep crapping on the BVS, but it is not a good movie. But
no.
Like the whole thing is like, Batman is, and the world, I guess, is sort of like suspicious of Superman because he's sort of unknown and has all these powers and all this stuff. And they just assume he's going to turn bad or go bad or whatever. And there's nothing in the movie to refute that except for the fact that he gets killed by Doomsday and has a mom named Martha. Like that's the only reason that Batman comes around, and he doesn't have a change of heart. And that was what was needed for that.
Yeah.
You know, Batman just stops thinking that. That's the only difference. Like, he doesn't actually believe. We don't see his shift, and that is the failing of that movie. One of the many failings of that movie. Grandma's piss or whatever is absolutely the failing of that movie. But
I mean, they don't give a reason why people don't trust Superman, because like all they do is show him saving people in this like these montage. I'm like, so why don't you like him?
Yeah.
Why is Batman so freaked out about, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. It's, I mean, ultimately it's because Zack Snyder read two comics in his whole life, and
yeah, he only knows those comics.
He wanted to have the fight from between Batman in the big metal suit and Superman.
Yeah.
And he wanted to retrofit the movie to make it that. And then Warner Brothers was like, well, we got to keep having him in movies because he's a big character. And so then they, like,
and there's nobody there's nobody at Warner Brothers who knows what these things are. Like, you know, until recently anyway, like until you had James Gunn running DC Studios, you don't have a DC Studios, number one. You just have executives who don't know from comics.
Yeah.
They just know the IP that they own.
Right.
And that's it. That's the big difference between like a Feige, who is a comics fan.
Yep.
You know, and they just didn't have, they were lucky with Chris Nolan, because whatever you think about Chris Nolan, clearly loves Batman, the character, and mm-hmm. knows his Batman lore. It's all over those movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he likes any other superheroes particularly, but he knows Batman and he knows Batman comics. It's there. So we got lucky, but nobody else really had that affinity, you know, almost, you know, and it showed. So that's why I feel Gunn knows, like, clearly by the things he's posting and has posted over the last year, he knows his Superman.
Yep.
You know, he's not going to make it. He's not going to, I know he did that like evil Superman movie himself, or produced it, whatever, the one with a bright, and people were worried it was going to be that. I'm like, no, like, he understands that this is something else.
No,
you know, he's already done that movie, by the way. So it's like, why is he going to, you know,
no, I think he also understands the gravity of like, I need to make Superman, Superman again.
Yeah.
He needs to stop being Homelander, because there is a Homelander, and it, like, you can't, and like your point, you can't subvert a Superman if there's no Superman to subvert.
Yeah.
Like, it's just showing that everybody who has Superman's powers and status is just going to be evil and eventually kill a bunch of people and get away with it or whatever. And it's like, we live in a world where that is very, like, even without that's real. So why would I want to watch that in my superhero? Like, that's why I know The Boys is good. Like, I know it in my heart, really, but I can't watch it because I don't want that in my
heart. I get it. It's it's a little bit too close to home sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, we don't have distance from any of these things in the world. You know what I'm saying? Like, which I think is important. It's important to have media that comments on things that are going on, which I think a lot of stuff has been scared to do until recently. Like, entertainment, like the big entertainment blockbusters have been like, we don't want to talk about anything going on politically. We want to appeal to everyone. So they've just been escapism, and that's mm-hmm. important. But I do feel like, I do like that The Boys does that. But I get why someone might not want to watch it, especially the more they lean into the Homelander of it all.
Yeah. And I think there's a chance here for Gunn's Superman to comment on all that stuff that these other shows are commenting on it, but showing the other version, there is a better way. Like, Superman needs to be a beacon, not just of power, but of wholesomeness, not the American way, but the humanity way. Like, this is the way people ought to live. Whether you have a super strength or not.
I really think
close to that, but I think Superman has a better chance of it.
Yeah. And I really do think next year the entire world is going to fall in love with crypto. I think crypto is going to be, like, I just feel like that, like you said, you want to make Superman relatable, give him a dog.
Yep.
You know, and if that dog can fly, even better. You know, if that dog bites bad people, mean people, like, we're just going to automatically love it.
Mm-hmm. So if you at home have, or in your car, I don't know where you listen to this, haven't read any of those comics, I would recommend them. Eric would recommend them. You can also read Eric's list of the best comics runs. It came out December, so just a couple months ago, the 10 greatest Superman comic book runs ranked. You can find that on Nerdist.com. Really great stuff on there. You know, from writers you definitely know and other ones you maybe haven't heard of, like, you know, that wasn't listed here, but like, you know, Mark Waid's run, Superman Birthright. And then you also have Peter Tomasi, which we mentioned a little bit, but also Jeff Johns's run, which is, you know, he wrote a bunch of other characters and kind of doesn't get talked about for his Superman work. So that's really interesting. Yeah. But Eric, how can people get a hold of you on, see your thoughts on the internet if they want to?
I am still on the Twitter at GeekBoyEric, and you can find me there. I am very active in that hell site.
Someone has to be.
Somewhere I am. And on Instagram too, same, at GeekBoyEric.
You follow me on Instagram at Kyle_Anderson. Nope, Functional_Nerd. You can follow me on Letterboxd at Kyle_Anderson. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, of course, for joining me, Eric, and talking, as always, about superheroes.
Thank you.
And you'll be back to do it again many more times. join me again next week on Laser Focus when my guest will be a different person. Bye-bye. Laser Focus is a production of Nerdist Industries and Legendary Digital Networks. It was produced, edited, and hosted by me, Kyle Anderson. For more, visit Nerdist.com.